Welcome to episode 388 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, in case you don't recognize this voice. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Welcome back, Richard. It is fantastic to have you back. And I'm sure all of our listeners are feeling the exact same way right about now.
I am very glad to be back. It has been a long month and a half. I've had a lot of life going on, and I greatly appreciate for you and others filling in while I just could not be here. My schedule just would not allow it.
And for anybody who was worried that it was like the end of Richard being on the show, have no fear. Richard's back. He's not going anywhere. It was just a season in his life.
And for anyone who was hoping that James was back and I was gone, sorry to disappoint you.
James is far too busy for that to be the case. All right. Well, why don't we dig into this week's feedback? We've got a couple of messages. They were both sent into our inbox at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. This first one is from Larry, and I'm sorry, it's a couple of weeks old, but still some valuable information here from a story that happened to Larry. He says, "Do I have a story for you? But before I get to that, I love the podcast and thank you for doing it." Well, thanks, Larry. We do it for you and for everybody else listening. He says, "I have two HD Home Run Primes shared by three Windows 7 Media Center PCs. I'm on charter using cable cards. This Sunday morning," and that Sunday morning would have been November 6th, I believe, "I went to watch the morning news and it couldn't find a tuner. So I rebooted several times and still no go. I tried a different home theater PC, the more powerful one, and I got the same results. So now I was starting to feel sick. So I went to the HD Home Runs and powered them down, tuning resolvers and the network switch off and back on again. That changes nothing. I then noticed that one of the HD Home Runs was caught in a reboot loop. I figured it had died, so I powered it off and reconfigured the HTPC for just one HD Home Run. That seemed to work, but then the video would lock up after a few minutes. So now I noticed that the other HD Home Run was rebooting every 2 to 3 minutes. So now I'm beginning to wonder if Charter had done something with cable card. I called support and worked with a really good tech, which is amazing, and after a while, figured out that wasn't the problem. I started this adventure at 9 a.m. and at this point it was 2 p.m. I was racking my brain trying to figure out what the issue was. You see, I'm a Packers fan and they were on TV at 4:30. I'm searching through the Silicon Dust forums to see if there was a solution. No luck. Then I noticed that the firmware on my HD Home Runs was 3 years old, but remember seeing everything was working fine Saturday night. So I applied the latest firmware and software, and guess what? Both HD Home Runs started working. So I'm wondering, what's the difference between Saturday and Sunday? You know what I think it is? The end of daylight saving time. Evidently, the version of firmware my HD Home Runs were on had a bug with daylight saving time ended this year that caused them to get into a reboot loop. By the way, when it looked like I was not going to get my HD Home Runs working, I tried Charter's watch live TV through a browser. While it worked, it was not the first class experience that you get with Media Center and a 10-foot TV interface with a remote. The short experience had me scared about what I'm going to when classic DVR TV goes away sometime way too soon. I know lots of people like to stream stuff, but that really doesn't work as well as TV, especially when you can pause, rewind, go forward, and record.
Okay, first of all, classic DVR TV is not going away soon.
I guess that's a relative term, right?
Relative is a good word, but you know, we keep on hearing about cord cutting. We keep on hearing about people losing subscribers, but folks still, as a majority of people, get their TV from a cable provider. It is still the case, even with the dwindling numbers.
Right. A vast, vast majority of Americans still get it through cable. Yep, absolutely. Well, Larry, I'm glad you found the solution to that before your Packers game had started. 3-year-old firmware, probably not the situation you want to be in with any of your hardware. I guess that's a reminder for all of us to go and check the firmware on our tuners, and your router would be a good thing to check. Lots of important devices in your ecosystem to keep up to date.
This is an interesting timing on this message, because I just in the last 24 hours swear that I saw something from Silicon Dust reminding everybody to make sure that their firmware on their device is up to date.
You did. I saw it too. It was a tweet from them yesterday, I believe.
Okay. So that's kind of crazy timing. I think that has to do more with stuff that they're rolling out and they need to make sure that everybody is compatible with it. But it got me thinking, with the 27 different apps that they install on your desktop when you set up the tuner, you would think that one of the things they might actually install is some system that automatically checks for and prompts you when new versions of the firmware become available.
Yeah, I suppose. And I think you're being a little too hyperbolic there. I think it installs.
Okay, maybe it's
two
only
apps.
Three.
I think it's two.
I'm pretty convinced I have three, but okay.
All
the
right.
Viewer might not be its own icon anymore, but there used to be a player that was also included in that. Anyway, I this is a very manual process, and I have to just admit that I have often forgotten to do this. And when I go look, I'm like, wow, I'm a year behind. I should see if there are updates. And even doing that is a little bit tedious. It's not just kind of built into the UI like I might expect it to be, unless that has changed recently.
Well, and it's a little scary. Like, if everything's working, then you might wonder, why would I want to do an update? But sometimes there are new features, sometimes it'll work better. But
right.
We've all been burned by an update that makes things worse.
Sure. Yep. All right. Well, we have another message from Alan. And Alan, I think this is meant for you, Josh. And Alan says, I was catching up with shows and heard about your media center stopping. I use Pulseway, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes, to keep track of my PCs. It's free for up to 5 machines. And there are Android and iOS apps. I have mine configured to send me the status of the Win7 system up or down, changes in the system like installed apps, who logs in and out. I also have it configured to let me know if shows fail to record and to be able to view the Media Center event log. Works pretty good. You should check it out.
I should check it out. You know, I'm looking. I didn't do this yet, but I've heard of apps like this, and they're always like hideous, you know, like anything that's designed to be like super IT focused, like it always just looks awful and it's no fun to use. This doesn't look too bad at all. And also having an app on the phone is a really nice feature too, because I use my phone a heck of a lot more than I use any of my desktop PCs at home. So I might have to check this out. This is a good idea. And I thank Alan for sharing this with us and with all the rest of our listeners. This is a good idea to have some sort of monitoring on your home theater PCs. They're pretty critical machines.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And if it's app-based, then in theory, it could use device notifications to let you know if something is awry.
Yeah, and Alan is actually in the chat room tonight, and he says the notifications work really well. So, cool. Definitely be checking that out soon, and I encourage all the rest of our listeners to do the same. So, Richard, what do you say we jump into some news?
Let's do this. I'm a little bit rusty, but let's do it.
All right. I'm sure you'll keep up. So, the first story, this comes from Windows Central. They called this, "What Happened to the Rumored Xbox Streaming Stick?" Richard, you remember the Streaming Stick rumors that we talked about shortly before E3. It looked like Microsoft was on the verge of releasing a streaming stick or something, you know, some sort of small set-top boxy sort of device that would give you similar features to an Xbox One, like the ability to watch apps and, you know, or use apps and things like that on your TV, but would be significantly cheaper than an Xbox One. Well, according to Windows Central sources, this was absolutely happening. It was called, it was codenamed Hobart, and it was supposed to be announced at E3 and released shortly thereafter. And like all of our rumored speculations had said, it was going to run UWP apps and including the ability to stream the Xbox One interface like we can do with the Xbox app on Windows 10 PCs, where you can use a PC to stream games and apps from an Xbox One to another PC. This would have been awesome. It would have been $99. And I kind of go back and forth on that price, on whether it would have been too much or about right. And my initial gut reaction, Richard, was $99 for that type of device is way too much. But I'm not so sure that it is. It, you know, if it's running all of these apps that we've got on the Xbox One, which frankly, I think the Xbox One might be the best current available living room device for video consumption apps. And it has pretty much everything and it works well. It would play some games theoretically, like maybe play some UWP games potentially, and use it as essentially a remote Xbox. It's still a little bit cheaper than an Amazon Fire and a lot cheaper than an Apple TV. So maybe that price wouldn't have been so bad. What do you think?
I agree completely, because I think, as most people know, I hate all the crap that surrounds trying to get to the video apps and the entertainment apps that are in the Xbox. As a person who is not primarily using the box for gaming, primarily, meaning at all, I still have to dig through and get past all of that stuff that I really don't care about from day to day. And it puts me off using the Xbox as my daily driver for a lot of these, even though, as you state, it's the only box I have that has everything.
Yeah, it really does.
Now, I'm a little bit concerned because you're using the, I think it's called conditional perfect form of the verb here. Would have been.
Would have been, because they whacked that thing. It's not happening. It got cut. Well, I guess what we don't know is it dead for good? The article didn't really indicate whether it's dead for good, but it definitely got put on the shelf. And this article also indicated that Microsoft was not planning to announce the Scorpio at E3. Now, when they did, we all said, it seems a little odd to be announcing the Scorpio a year and a half before it's coming out. But Windows Central's thought is, and this is what a lot of people have said since the E3 event, is that they felt like they needed to do that because the Sony PS4 Pro had been leaked shortly before E3. And so Microsoft felt like they had to announce the Scorpio so that people would know, even if a more powerful PlayStation is coming out soon, an even more powerful console than that was going to be coming next year from Xbox. So
right.
I don't know that, you know, bumping the Scorpio up and the Xbox One S announcement up is what caused the streaming stick to go away. But I'm a little sad that it did go away, because if you do want a device that has access to all those apps, or you're really into Groove Music or Microsoft's Movies and TVs app, which I'm not sure how many people that actually is, but if that is you, the only way to get those things on a TV, short of hooking up a computer, which most people other than our audience won't do, is to buy an expensive Xbox One. So having a lower cost option to do all of that would have been really nice. So it's dead, at least for the time being, but who knows, maybe we'll see this announced next year. But it seems like this fall would have been a good time to release it, but maybe they felt like releasing it would have cannibalized some of their Xbox One S sales. But I can't really see that being the case.
No, this frustrates me because this is a big hole in their offering, and there have been rumors about them doing this for literally years. We've heard about the concept of like an Xbox Mini, which would be this, essentially, would be the Xbox stripped down just to its entertainment stuff, and it would be less expensive, and it would be there to compete with the Rokus and the Apple TVs and the Android TVs. And there are those big companies right there. Who's missing from that list? Oh, right, Microsoft. Again, this was theirs to drop, and I'm really frustrated that they did.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, well, speaking of things that Microsoft dropped on the Xbox platform, let's talk about DVR service.
That's a negative way to spin this story, which I think is a positive story.
It is a positive story. So if you want DVR service on your Xbox, there might still be hope. And it's not just going to be specific services that we've talked about in the past. Like we've talked about how on the Plex DVR, which is in beta, you can watch things that are recorded through the regular Plex client. And we've also talked a little bit about the HD Home Run client. Well, Tableau is now bringing its application to the Xbox One and to the latest version of Windows 10. So I'm assuming that means it's a UWP app. For those of you who don't either recall or know, because we don't really talk about Tableau a lot, Tableau is essentially a BYO storage over-the-air DVR solution. Kind of like Simple TV, I think, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm. And Channel Masters offering.
And Channel Masters, that's true. Essentially, it is a headless DVR, and it sits on your network, and you attach your own storage to it, and it has two or four tuners, and it allows you to do all the goodness that you get with a DVR, like pausing live TV and recording and skipping commercials and all of that sort of stuff. It has a guide. It's a really nice system, and it has more and more clients that you can now use to get to that content, including live and recorded content. Now you can watch that on your XBO, on your Xbox. And in addition to that, you can just also record stuff there. It's not just like the Plex client where you can only watch. You can actually control this thing there too. So I'm really excited about this. I know a lot of people that are excited about Tableau. You know, Dave over at Reset talks about the Tableau all the time. I don't know if he's still using it or not, but he was really big on that for a very long time, and he was into that before a lot of other people were. Now, the entry price for Tableau is, if you're looking at list price, about $220 for a two-tuner unit or $300 for a four-tuner unit. That's not so bad, but here's where people get a little bit concerned. There's a subscription cost of $5 a month. And before you groan too much, it's $5 a month. I mean, $5, that's like less than a beer.
Less than a good beer, at least.
So if you are looking for a solid, proven DVR solution for over-the-air content, this is one that you might want to seriously consider now.
Yeah, and you know, you listed the list prices for the Tableau.
Right,
but
right.
On Amazon, the two-tuner box is $180, and the four-tuner box is $250. Those are pretty good prices. You slap like $100, 3 terabyte, external hard drive on there, and you're good to go. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and those portable hard drives are less and less expensive nowadays too. I remember when this first came out, storage wasn't quite as cheap as it is now.
Right. Absolutely. So very, very cool offering.
Now talking about additional video services on the Xbox, Fandango Now is now on the Xbox One. And if you don't know what Fandango Now is, anybody remember MGo? Fandango Now is basically a Fandango rebranded MGo. It's a video service that was available on a number of different devices previously, but Fandango hadn't really released apps for the 10-foot interface consoles yet. And so this is the first console to have this service. There are a ton of movies out there and lots of TV shows. I think 40, 40,000 movies is what they're saying, or 40,000 movies and TV shows. So usually there's some fake math in there because they're counting right. episodes of yeah. shows. And all you really need is a couple different seasons or some couple different series of Star Trek, and you've already got yourself like 1,000 episodes right there. But these are rent and purchase, just like on Vudu. You know, I equate this very much to Vudu. In fact, it's also an ultraviolet service. And I know that we've talked about Fandango now in the past because they've occasionally had some specials where you could get free or significantly discounted movies. And if you don't subscribe to their newsletter, I would advise that you do, because if you use movies in the ultraviolet ecosystem, most of what they sell there is compatible with that. So something interesting to look at. And they also have something called a TV season pass, which is very much like, I think it's buying a season in advance. Is that your understanding as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So pretty much you just go in there, find the current TV shows that you want to be watching, plop down, you know, you can rent per episode, of course, or purchase per episode, or just pay. Like I went and looked at, is it This Is Us? Is that the new show that you've been watching and I've been watching?
Yep.
$20 for the whole season. You just pay once, and whenever new episodes come out, they're automatically in your library.
And that's pretty good pricing there, because usually those season passes are priced based on how many episodes are in the season.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure. I didn't look at a lot of the other TV series to see how those prices compared, but I was thinking that, you know, usually you're looking at $2 to $3 per episode,
right,
to get digital copy of a TV show. And like sometimes they'll discount the season passes, but This Is Us is going to have a full season. So I think this is a pretty significant discount for this show. So, if you're the type of person who's going out and just, especially cord cutters, you know, if you don't have cable, this is how you get access to TV legally, at least. This is a really good option to check out, because you might save some money here on the shows that you want to buy over services like Amazon.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our gaming news. It's actually been a big couple of weeks for the Xbox, which is kind of surprising, because as we've mentioned the last couple of episodes, this isn't really a big time of the year in terms of news for video game consoles and things like that, because they're just focused on getting a whole bunch of brand new games out the door. But Microsoft has announced a couple of big things over the last couple of weeks. The first is that the Xbox preview program has been renamed. It is now the Xbox, this is going to surprise nobody, the Xbox Insider Program. And they've opened it up, although I think a lot of people got their hopes up for maybe not such good reasons. Okay, so the Xbox Insider Program, it's similar to the Windows Insider Program in that anybody can join it, and there's an insider hub where you can see, you know, what some of the latest things are that are going on, and you know, the bigger thing is provide feedback on all of the things that are going on with the latest releases of apps and the operating system. But the important thing to know here is, if you've been dying to get into the preview program on the Xbox One to get the latest system updates before they're out, you can't do that through the Xbox Insider Program. Unless you're already in, if you were already in the preview program, you'll still get them and you'll just be part of the Xbox Insider Program. But now, if you join and you weren't previously in the preview program, you're still not getting the system updates. You're going to get the Insider Hub. You're going to get access to some apps ahead of time and beta releases of certain apps ahead of time, but you still won't be getting system updates ahead of time the way some of us have been doing through the regular Xbox preview program for the last couple of years.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that those people who have been in the preview program will be grandfathered and will still get system updates, but there's no way for people to newly enroll in that program?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. You've got it 100% right.
Huh.
Yeah. So I imagine they're still going to slowly let some people in from time to time as they've been doing with the previous preview program, but you're not just going to be able to download Insider OS updates for the Xbox One the way that you can if you're a Windows Insider or Windows 10 Mobile Insider. So that might stink if that's what you're looking to do. But other than that, it's really not much more than a name change, and they've got a new version of their feedback system, essentially. That's all this really is. So what's way more interesting, and everyone can appreciate, is the Xbox Holiday Update has arrived. So all of the features that I've been telling you about for the last couple of months, they're now available to everybody. And there's some cool features in here. The first one is Clubs. Clubs is actually kind of neat. It allows you to just set up groups of people. You get chat. You essentially get a message board to send messages to everybody in your club. You can call the club whatever you want. You can tag your club with different attributes like what games you like and whether it's adults only and if swearing's okay, things like that. And then, you know, people can request to join your club. You can join, I think it's up to 10 clubs at a time. And then, you know, when you're in a club, your friends list will show which of your club members are also online, not just your friends. So some really neat stuff with clubs. The looking for group feature is now available to everybody. That means basically go to an app you want to play, say you want to play some NHL, go to that game, you know, don't fire up the game, just go to the game in the dashboard. And then go to the looking for group section, and you can see a big list of everybody who's looking to play that game, whether it's right now or in the future. You can schedule a looking for group request for the future. Say you know you're going to be able to play Friday night. You can say, I'm a goalie. I like to play goalie in NHL, and I'm looking for five other people to play NHL with Friday night at 9 p.m. And people can see that message and ask to join you. And it's a great way to find new people to play your favorite games with. They've added group messaging. Not a lot to say there. You can send messages to multiple people at the same time. They've also added achievement rarity. This is kind of a cool thing. A lot of people really, really like the achievement system on the Xbox platform. And what this does is if you get an achievement that a very small percentage of people who've played the game have gotten, it'll pop up a special notification indicating you're pretty awesome. You got this achievement that not very many people got, and it'll tell you, you know, the percentage of people who have gotten it. So, I mean, it's just a nice little thing to have pop up. It's different music. It looks a little bit different. It'll give you an even bigger warm and fuzzy feeling when you're getting your achievements. So that's cool. And then they've also made some more changes and enhancements to the GamerScore leaderboard. Honestly, I don't really remember what these are. I'm not an achievement hunter, so I'm not constantly focused on the GamerScore leaderboard, but I know some of you are, so check out the enhancements to that, because all of this is available right now. Right,
Josh,
now. Run
Josh,
to your Xbox,
Josh,
and get this.
Josh, you're missing the coolest thing here. You haven't
oh,
even
I'm
mentioned
not missing it.
It.
I was saving the best for last, Richard. Do you want to tell our listeners what the best new feature of the Xbox Holiday Update is?
Emoji!
Everyone loves emoji, right? I guess if my wife actually used the Xbox for, you know, social stuff, this would be her favorite feature. I can tell you that.
My bet is that they're going to be a pain in the neck to use. That, as I understand it, it's going to be on the virtual keyboard. So you're going to have to call it up and you're going to have to page through them. As far as I'm concerned, nobody has implemented emoji as well as Slack has. And why that is, I can't figure out. Because if you could just type a couple characters and find the emoji that you want, that'd be cool. These are going to be keys that you can select in the virtual keyboard.
All right, we've already talked more about the emoji than they really deserve.
But emoji!
Okay, so I found a really interesting story that I wanted to share with our listeners. Over the last couple of years, I've talked on and off about Steam machines, the and the Steam operating system. And just as a quick recap, The Steam operating system is just Linux running Steam. It's just Steam. Steam is the platform that most people, myself included, use for playing games on a PC. Windows PC, Linux PC, Mac, whatever. They all have Steam. It's basically the way everybody plays games on their PC. A couple years ago, Valve, the makers of Steam, announced Steam Machines, basically computers that were designed to go in your living room, connected to your TV to play Steam games. Their idea was really twofold. We want to beat consoles in the living room, and we want to beat Microsoft. Like, we're sick of Microsoft. We want to just do everything on our own. I've always felt like it was partly due to Microsoft announcing the App Store for Windows in Windows 8. And because when they did that, Gabe Newell from Valve was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're trying to steal all of our revenue and all this stuff, and totally freaking out. And obviously he was wrong. So this week over on PC Gamer's website, they had an interesting interview with Frank Azer. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it. He's the co-founder of Alienware. Alienware is a subsidiary of Dell. They make some of the most popular gaming PCs out there, and they've been doing it for a really long time. They also make a bunch of Steam machines. Well, the whole point of this interview is basically there was all of this hype about Steam machines, you know, especially about a year ago or 2 years ago, and now we hardly hear about it. You know, what's going on, and what's the reason for Steam machines kind of fading away? And I thought he gave some really interesting answers in this interview. Like, he was basically said that the main reason that SteamOS and Steam machines became a thing was because Valve and PC gamers across the world felt like Microsoft had completely abandoned gamers with Windows 8. Now, I don't completely understand how Windows 8 did that to people. The driver system was a little bit different, but okay. So all the video card manufacturers caught up to speed on releasing new video card drivers.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like, you know, gamers get in line with everybody else that felt abandoned by Windows 8.
and I still point at the whole Windows Store controversy thing. But he basically said Windows 8 wasn't for gamers. They Microsoft had completely given up any focus on supporting gamers, despite the fact that Windows was then and still is now the place where people are playing computer games. You know, usage of Windows versus Mac and Linux for computer games is way, way, way higher than those other two, as you might expect. It's just how PCs are used. But what he said was that he thinks the biggest reason why Steam machines have started to fade is Microsoft and Windows 10. That basically, Microsoft, when they released Windows 10 and really started focusing more on gaming, which they've done entirely under the Xbox brand, but on PCs in Windows 10, that caused gamers and the entire gaming industry to say, all right, you know, maybe we don't need Steam machines. Maybe we don't need SteamOS. Maybe we don't need to be so worried that Microsoft is going to ruin PC gaming with the latest versions of Windows. Like, he's basically saying here, Microsoft, they did the right thing. They listened to feedback like they listened to so much feedback about Windows 8. And it's been really, really great for Windows gamers. And I have to agree, like, the Xbox app on Windows 10 is really great, regardless of whether you're playing on an Xbox or on your Windows PC. There's a lot of really cool features in there. And I completely agree with Frank Azer here. He went so, and this is the part that really shocked me, he went so far as to say Steam machines and SteamOS are not necessary right now. Not necessary. Like, that sounds like they're one step away from just not making them anymore. Like, if it's not necessary, because he also said that the Windows 10 versions of their Alienware Alpha, that's their primary gaming PC, significantly outsells their Steam machine version of the same box and all of their other Steam Machine boxes. So it makes me wonder how much more effort are PC manufacturers like Alienware going to continue to put in to creating Steam Machines. I have to think that's a small amount and that it's going to fairly quickly die out entirely. I never saw the point of right. Steam Machines. I never right. thought that these were boxes that were really going to take off well.
Well, and they were supposed to take off, what, 2 years ago? And right. they just never really did. They talk a lot about it being Windows 8. I also think a lot of it was a reaction along the lines of, you know, we want our own thing. We want something specifically for gaming that some big company like Microsoft isn't controlling, and that it, in theory, then might be more open and more, you know, more along the lines of what Android was for mobile. I don't mm-hmm. know that it ever would have achieved that, or that would have been a good solution, particularly if you want to guarantee that any game can run on your platform. But I think that I've agreed with you from the beginning. When we first learned about this at CES years ago, we both looked at each other and said, why?
Right. Yep. A Windows PC can just do so much more. PC gamers don't only game on their PCs. They do other things too. Other things that you just can't do on a Steam machine. So really, really great article. I encourage anybody who's into PC gaming, go and check out this article. It was really interesting. All right. So Richard, it is almost that time of year where we all lose our minds and just start spending money like crazy because Black Friday is right around the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to warn you, I might lose my mind.
From these deals?
I'm back on the I might get an Xbox One S bandwagon.
Uh-oh, so am I, actually.
And this deal is one of the reasons.
Yep. So this deal is, actually, tons of Black Friday deals. But the main thing is Xbox One S bundles are dropping to about $250, and some of them I've seen for even less. It's nuts. Like, this console came out 3 months ago for $300, and now we're looking at $250 bundles. And these are bundles. That means they come with a game. It's not just a console. It's the console, a controller, and a game, or multiple games for $250. And in some cases, we're seeing other crazy promotions, like Kohl's. If you buy one from Kohl's, it's $250. It includes a game and a $75 Kohl's gift card. What? That's bonkers.
That is like crazy. That's amazing. I love it. Yeah, I'll tell you what's happening is I have the 4K itch again.
Yep.
And I'm thinking a 4K television around Christmas mm-hmm. would be pretty cool.
You and I are on the same page, brother.
And what better way to power it than with the new Xbox One S? And the Battlefield 1 edition is dark gray. I don't have to get white.
You like that color, eh?
I'm liking it.
Huh. All right. I wasn't quite sure that I like that color so much, but that's cool if you're into it.
Well, it's better than the Gears of War blue.
Yeah, that's not so cool. That's more that's a blue that's kind of on the verge of becoming aquamarine.
Yeah,
like no thanks. But all of the other non Gears of War ones, I'm up for it. Those look cool. So that's only the start of it. Like, you're gonna find lots of games on sale, including digital games. Like, we're used to seeing all of the stores selling physical games for cheap, and we're going to give you a list to find all of that stuff. But as a reminder, Microsoft again this year is doing a digital Black Friday sale too, and it actually starts before Black Friday for everybody, but even earlier if you are an Xbox Live Gold member. If you are, it starts November 18th. You know, that's Friday. That's, you know, if you're listening to this, when the show comes out, it comes out, you know, the sale starts tomorrow. You can get started buying super cheap digital games on a Friday and then play them all weekend. Like, that's awesome. If you're not a gold member, which I don't understand why you're not, but if you're not, the sale starts for everybody else on the 22nd. It runs all the way through November 28th, Cyber Monday. Dumbest name in retail. And they're going to have even bigger sales over the Black Friday holiday. I just called Black Friday holiday weekend. So that would be the 25th through the 28th.
Well, that is the holiday, right?
I guess it kind of is. It's the second holiday of the weekend. Thanksgiving, then Black Friday. Right. So lots of really, really great deals there from Microsoft and from on digital games. But like I said, there are tons of crazy deals on consoles, on controllers. Controllers are going to be like $40, even the brand new ones at a lot of places, and games super cheap all over the place. The best place to find and keep track of all of those deals is actually Reddit. And we're going to have a link to this in the show notes. There is a 2016 Black Friday deals mega thread. They've got links to all of the ad scans from all of the stores, and every game and console bundle that they have available from all of these stores listed in one place on Reddit. It is the place to go to look for your Xbox Black Friday deals. All right. Well, Richard, it's also the second half of the month, so we got to quickly point out the new games with gold that you can pick up if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber. You can grab Murdered Soul Suspect, that's an Xbox One game, for free. And on the 360 side, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, again, backwards compatible. So if you're on Xbox One, you get both of these games starting on the 16th. So go and grab those too. All right, that's it for our gaming.
That is it for gaming, finally. Now, we didn't really have any mobile news, but I wanted to catch up on something that you mentioned in the last episode, and that was that between then and now, the Alcatel Idol 4S has become available at T-Mobile. This is the Windows phone that you talked about. It has pretty decent specs. Interestingly, it comes with a visor for Windows 10 VR, to the extent that that exists. And I think you mentioned the price last time as well. It's $469.99, and since it's T-Mobile, that means you can pay monthly, and the monthly price for that is just under $20, $19.59 a month, which isn't too bad for this phone. But I have to wonder, who are they targeting with this phone? I don't understand.
You and me alike. I don't know who's buying this phone.
I don't understand. And along those lines, the last holdout at the Digital Media Zone who is using Windows Phone, Phil Lozen, is now an Android guy.
Yep. It's sorry to see everybody switching, but it had to happen.
Yep.
So yep. I guess we know that Phil won't be buying an Idol 4S.
Yeah, I'm thinking not.
Smart choice. All right, Richard. So you haven't been around for a month and a half, but I'm sure you've still been doing stuff with your TV and your entertainment center. So I'm going to grab a couple of beers and some ice cream, and you catch us all up on what's been going on in your entertainment center.
I actually want you to stick around because I want some of your thoughts on this. I've had some interesting experience as I've been further adapting Plex in our household. One of the things that I've been doing is getting my, I'll call it my movie server, set up again. And a lot of that was triggered by a couple of things, but the biggest one being when my media center went kablooey. And I was having the problems also with the handshake, with HDMI, and I was getting really frustrated. And so that's when I started looking at Plex more. And I was starting to copy the movie library that I have over to Plex. I did that from source. I went back to my discs and pulled the main title off of each of them. And my movie library now of 700 movies is fully backed up and available through flex.
So you re-ripped 700 movies?
I did.
Holy crap.
I did. Now, this is not why I've been unavailable to record episodes for the last month.
But it would have been a good reason.
If you have MKV running on a computer, it's easy to just have a stack. It's like when you ripped your CDs, you know, you just have a stack of them. And when one's done, you just throw the next one in. And Plex is so good at figuring out what it is that there's really no other work involved.
Right.
So this was a surprisingly easy process. So everything that was HD DVD, everything that was Blu-ray, everything that was DVD is now all up on that server as far as my movies are concerned. And of course, just as I get that done, now when I'm buying new discs, because I'm a physical media guy, I want the disc. I don't want some service to tell me 3 years down the road that no, I can't watch it because they don't have the license for it anymore. I want the friggin' disc. So now I'm buying Ultra HD discs when I'm buying movies, except for Disney, because they haven't bothered coming out with movies on Ultra HD. And now I'm thinking, okay, that's great. I can copy the Blu-ray onto my server that comes with those. But now what am I going to do when I get a 4K TV? I'm going to have to go back to using discs. So I'm going to have to get that Xbox One. You see how all this comes together?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to. You have to.
Now, something else that I found is that I have a lot of really old DVD movies because I bought DVDs like even before I had a DVD player. I think I've discussed that before.
You mean like you're buying Ultra HD disc before you have a player?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And some of the initial DVDs were not designed for widescreen televisions. They letterboxed the movie within the 4x3 frame, making it even smaller.
Right. Full screen DVDs.
So I have a lot of movies that are just kind of, you know, they look okay, but I'm thinking, well, for the ones that are really old like that, now I'm looking for things like bin specials at Best Buy.
Right.
Or the multi-disc pack that you can buy at Target, 4 movies in one pack for $10. And starting to replace some of those older ones that I have with stuff like that. But I'm really happy with this. I like it. Edward likes it. Our guests understand it. It's just so easy. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, it's so easy. It's so nice to look at. It's great. Plex is awesome.
Now, I've also been using the DVR more, and I was having a lot of problems recording, and it turns out that most of the problems that I was having recording actually had to do with Windows permissions across my network on the stores where I was trying to put the recorded content. Once I fixed that, everything started recording fine. And so now my daily recordings are just coming off of Plex DVR, and I just watch them in Plex. I still have some stuff on my TiVo, stuff that we'll end up watching together. I usually record on the TiVo, but this is working great for the stuff that previously I was recording in Media Center. What does that mean for Media Center? I am honestly, and I know I've been the person who said out of my cold, dead hands, but I'm honestly questioning whether it's even worth my time trying to rebuild my Media Center right now.
I hear you, man. I'm having similar feelings myself as I'm going through a lot of the same scenarios.
It's crazy. And I feel like a traitor saying that. Yeah,
that's because you didn't have to give up Windows Phone.
Well,
you haven't already dumped a major Microsoft product this year.
That's true. Now, the other thing that I've been exploring a little bit more are Plex channels. And I don't know if anybody really uses these or not. It is essentially the feed versions of the content that is available through most apps. If your device that you use for streaming has apps like for CBS and ABC and NBC and Fox and all of those.
Mm-hmm.
The really nice thing about it is that you can use Plex to mark something in any of those channels as something that you want to watch later. And it shows up in a separate area of the Plex clients called Watch Later. So you've basically bookmarked stuff that you want to watch at a later point in time. And then it'll go back and let you watch those. Now, it still has to be there in the feed. Right. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to watch it. But that's a really nice feature. And it crosses all of the different channels as opposed to maybe being able to do that or not in any given app. The other thing that it has going for it over the apps is that it's the CBS feed that the CBS apps won't let you get at anymore, because you now have to pay CBS All Access extortion fee to watch CBS content on the CBS apps, but not through this channel. So that's kind of nice.
That is pretty nice. I didn't realize it did that.
All right. I've been watching a lot of TV, obviously. And let's start with the World Series.
What? You watched baseball?
I did. I couldn't believe it. I was enthralled. I was fascinated. I had to see, come on, these two teams, one which hadn't won in what, like something like 80 years, and the other that hadn't won in 108 years or something. I mean, it's right. Crazy. So I was really enthralled by that game, and that it went into overtime, or whatever you call it, extra innings, and that they ended up basically shutting down the game for a while because there was a rain delay. And so it was crazy. I really enjoyed that. I had a lot of fun. And then the following week, I watched the circus known as Election 2016.
How late did you stay up?
I stayed up until about 2:30, and then I gave up.
Yeah, I largely stayed up until
because
about 2.
I ran out of snacks to binge eat.
I was IMing with a friend of mine throughout election night, and he said, "So what are you watching on?" And I just replied with everything. I had the Xbox on the TV, flipping between like 2 and 3 channels, you know, using the HD Home Run app on my laptop. I was switching between a couple of channels. I had the CNN and New York Times websites up. I'm a total nerd for this stuff. I was watching it all over the place.
Yeah, I was not thrilled with most of the coverage. I ended up basically settling with CNN. I don't think any network that I flipped through particularly did it as well as I wanted them to. And CNN was really getting on my nerves with just all of the, you know, branded and trademarked graphics that are running across. We have an important update with nothing to update you on. I mean, it was ridiculous. Right. It was just absolutely ridiculous.
Key race right. alert. This state is still too close to call.
Right. Key race alerts. Right. Exactly. And one of my favorites was, and I tweeted this, that they interrupted a key race alert with everybody too close to call with another key race alert where another state was too close to call. I could not friggin' believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was mostly switching between CNN because they had pretty good detailed coverage of like down to the counties and stuff.
Right.
NBC because Tom Brokaw, enough said, and CBS because CBS had the best looking graphics and overlays and stuff. They were gorgeous. Loved them.
That's good. I thought CNN did a terrible job with the graphics and the way they were switching back and forth between prior year and current year elections with no significant indicator visually that it was past or current was very confusing.
Yeah. Did you look at Fox News at all? I usually switch back and forth between them because they sometimes have people on that I like, but their graphics were hideous. I went once and was like, nope, can't watch this. Not going to watch this, and never went back. It matters.
Yeah. I mean, my issues with Fox News are not solely about political leanings. I also feel like it's bargain news. I feel like it's like the bargain basement version of the news studio in terms of production quality. And that seems to be the case fairly consistently whenever I stumble by there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I also watched some regularly scheduled television and some streaming shows. So I was watching The Newsroom the last time I was on this show. I finished that up. I am now up to season 4, trying to keep up with Brian and Tom on Court Killers with Justified. The new season of television is well underway, and so I'm watching Arrow, The Flash, Hawaii Five-O, New Girl, Superstore, Shameless has started, and I'm trying to catch up on that because I didn't realize it had started, because that was one of the shows that I hadn't moved over to my new DVR recording mechanisms yet.
Whoops.
Yeah. I'm trying out Designated Survivor, which is the new Kiefer Sutherland show. The premise is interesting, and the idea of an entirely new Congress doesn't sound terrible to me. So I am watching that. Luke Cage is one of the new Marvel shows on Netflix, and I've watched a couple of episodes of that. Two shows that I think are just standouts this season. You mentioned in the last episode that you've been watching This Is Us. I love this show. I think it is so well done. It is so much more than your average family drama multi-star plot thing. I think they've done a fantastic job in storytelling in this show.
Yeah, we've still only watched the first episode, but I very much want to get back to this.
Yeah, this is one where I was behind and I binge watched it, and now I can't wait for new episodes. I absolutely love it. The other thing that I've been watching, and this is by far my favorite thing this entire fall, and that is HBO's Westworld. It is phenomenal. I had no idea what to expect. I had watched the movies when I was much younger, and so I was familiar with the concept of Westworld and Future World and its sequels. And what they have done to bring this into the future of technology as we might project it today, and the clever way that they've woven storylines together and occasionally referenced back to the original, I just think it is incredible. And if you have HBO and you haven't started watching this and you're a sci-fi fan, you have to try this show.
Now, you could, if you're a cord cutter, you could get this through HBO now, right?
Yes, you could. Absolutely.
So you could wait until the season is over, get HBO now for like 1 month, watch it all, and cancel HBO now, right?
Yes, you could. You could do that. And
I might have to do that.
You have no other reason for HBO, then I would recommend it. I think it is worth it, particularly if they might have like discounted first month trials.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely worth it. I finally saw Star Trek Beyond. Also saw Burnt, interesting movie with Bradley Cooper as a chef. Just a really nice story. And if you're at all, I would call this food porn. If you're at all into beautifully prepared meals and close-ups of amazing looking delicious food, you'll enjoy this movie. I then went back and started watching a canceled series that he did that's almost the entire same premise, but in a half-hour no laugh track comedy that was canceled after 3 episodes from like 10 years ago. It's called Kitchen Confidential, and it is entertaining. It's not great, but it's entertaining. And then just this week, Sausage Party came out on DVD. It might have actually been last week, or not DVD, but Blu-ray. And I knew this was coming out. The ads looked hysterical. Well, the ads were for a general audience. This animated film is not for a general audience. This animated film, if it weren't animated, I don't know how this would even get an NC-17 rating.
Oh my gosh. So when I saw this listed when I was looking at Fandango Now earlier, and I saw that it was listed as rated R, and was like, well, that must be a mistake. It's a cartoon. How could it be rated R?
Right.
But it is?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm not going to make you bleep me, but the first word in the movie was a sausage saying the four-letter S word. First word in the movie.
Wow. Wow. All right.
It was hysterical. It was really, really funny, really clever, and a lot of interesting commentary about ethnicity and relationships and stuff like that. And it was, not that it's deep by any means, but it was very right. entertaining. And I give them a lot of credit for actually doing this movie, because it's the kind of movie like, I can't believe they actually made that. Finally, I know I've been going on forever. Finally, I watched National Geographic's Mars just last night, actually, from when we're recording this. And I think it's brilliant. If you don't know about this, National Geographic has a series that they're putting out that is, I would call it kind of a future documentary, where they're talking about, it's based on the book, How We Get to Mars. And part of it is real life today interviews with Elon Musk and people from NASA and authors and all kinds of people who know a lot about space and space travel. And the other part of it is a drama played out in 2033 about the first landing on Mars. And it goes back and forth in a way that seems pretty seamless, even though the fact that they're clearly calling out that you're in one time or another, and it's pretty well acted and compelling. So if you're into space travel, and I'm a big space geek, give this a try, because I only found out about it because I read something, and I'm so glad that I'm watching it. I think it's amazing.
Cool. And that's on, is that on National Geographic Channel?
That is on National Geographic Channel.
Okay. Also on Amazon, you can buy a season pass for $15. I think it's
there.
I think
go.
It's going to be 6 episodes. So yeah, that does look really, really cool. All right, for me, I've also been using a lot of Plex lately, and one thing that I've done is I've started using Plex's mobile sync in combination with the Plex DVR. So I'm only doing this one day of the week. So like I said, I'm a political news nerd. I record multiple Sunday morning news shows. I normally record at least Meet the Press and Fox News Sunday. I've kind of given up on some of the other ones. Every week, listen to them or watch them every single week. I used to just listen to the podcast, but now that it's cold and I hate the cold, instead of running outside in the morning and listening to the podcast, I renewed my gym membership and I run on a treadmill. And as I was running on the treadmill one day, and they have a terrible local news broadcast going, and it's really just more distracting than anything because I'm trying to listen to a podcast, I thought, I've got Plex on my phone. Why don't I sync my Plex stuff to my phone and I can watch that stuff on my phone while I'm running on the treadmill? So that's what I do now. Every Sunday night, I jump on my phone and I say, do the mobile sync for, that day's airing of Meet the Press. And then I get to watch Meet the Press while I'm running. And I love it. It's great. It works really, really, really well.
That's very cool. I have a couple things that I've synced for viewing on an airplane, but I will say remote viewing in these apps, if you have good bandwidth at home, works really well.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're lucky enough to not have to worry about bandwidth either on your device or at home, and I am lucky enough to be in that position, then the streaming live from the server remotely is usually really, really good. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. That neither of those situations describe me, though. So I just use the mobile sync instead. All right. And in terms of other things that I've been watching, this is shocking, but I have been absolutely loving The Good Place. I don't watch comedies, but I love Kristen Bell and I am loving this show. It is,
I don't know what this
hilarious.
Is.
Kristen Bell has died and gone to The Good Place, and she totally shouldn't have. It was a mistake. She's not supposed to be, they don't call it heaven. They just call it The Good Place. She's not supposed to be there. They made a mistake. Okay. And so she's trying to hide that and stay there, because who wouldn't? And it's really, really funny.
And it's a comedy?
Yeah, it's a total comedy.
And it's a sitcom?
Yeah.
Josh?
I know. It's the power that Kristen Bell has over me. So, yeah, been watching. I'm almost current on that. I've been loving that show. And these, like, half-hour sitcoms, man, you can fly through a half-hour sitcom when, especially if you cut commercials or fast-forward through commercials and stuff. That's way fast.
21 minutes at the outside.
Right. It's awesome. And then also, we went to the movies this weekend. That doesn't happen very often now that we have kids, especially now that we have two of them. We went and saw Arrival this weekend. It was so, so good. The premise of the movie doesn't sound interesting. Well, not very interesting. So for those of you who don't know, and I'm not going to get too far into this because I don't want any spoilers or anything, but the premise is aliens show up on Earth. And one thing that I've never seen a movie cover is, if aliens show up, how do you communicate with them? Like, you're just hoping they speak English? Like, that seems unreasonable. And in this case, they don't. So the whole movie is centered around the government getting what this woman, who's basically the top linguist in the world, to go and try to figure out how to communicate with the aliens. There's a lot more to it than that, but that's how it starts. And it is really, really good. It's way better than what it sounds. Trust me. You want to go and see this movie. It's really good.
Yeah, I really, really want to see this. And it's been so long since I've seen a movie in the theater. I don't know if I'll get a chance to see this, but at least when it comes on video, this is a definite.
Yeah, and it's not a movie you have to see in the theater. Like, I'm all about seeing, like, big explodey movies in the theater, but this isn't one you have to see in the theater, but you do need to see it because it's really, really good.
Awesome.
All right. Well, after like 3.5 hours of us talking about what we've been watching, I think that's about it for the show.
It was only half an hour.
Right. So let's let all of our listeners know how they can get a hold of us and then let them go. So we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website's at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDMZ. We're on Google+. We've got the email address entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Just use the contact form. It's less to type. We've also got other podcasts. Richard, you do a show called Home On, and even though your life was absolutely nuts over the last month, a new episode of Home On came out this week. What was it about?
Well, finally, right? My life made it a little bit difficult for me to stay on schedule, but I finally got the episode out that I had recorded with the CEO of Simple Control, Will Price. Now, you may not be familiar with the name Simple Control, but you might know the name Rumi Remote. And if you have a complex entertainment system with multiple devices and maybe a tablet that you want to use, an iOS tablet specifically for controlling it all, they have the perfect solution for you. And I have loved what they've been doing. So many people that listen to the show were encouraging me to talk with them, and I'm so glad I did. I think it ended up being a great show. Will is an incredibly personal and energetic guest. So it ended up being a really good discussion, and I think you'll enjoy it. I also have a ton of stuff lined up. We have the session that I moderated at the Smart Kitchen Summit with the Juicero CEO, Doug Evans. That's going to be next. I have a lot of good guests coming up to the end of the year, including James Montemagno, a favorite, and CNET's Rye Crist, who's going to do the CES pre-show with me. So really looking forward to winding out the year with Home On.
Very cool. Very cool. And that latest episode, like you said, with Will Price, he did a phenomenal job. He did an awesome job.
Yeah, he was great.
All right. Well, you can find all of our podcasts pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts: iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, everywhere. And if you like them, subscribe. And then if you really want to do us a favor, leave us a rating or a review at any of those places, but especially over at iTunes. That's where it does the most good and helping attract more and more listeners to our shows. And we really, really appreciate that. Then come back, listen to us while we record the show live. But don't just listen. You can interact with us. There's a chat room. We tweet about it. It's usually Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Come listen while we record and talk. Get your voice heard while we're recording these episodes instead of sending us a message later. You can do it while we're recording. It's lots of fun for you, lots of fun for us, and hopefully we'll see you there next week, because that's going to do it for episode 388. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 389. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.